Hi, this is Manton Reese.
And this is Daniel Jalka.
And this is Core Intuition, the common bond of nerdery.
Well, Manton, we are back from England, and it was just a fantastic trip. It was so fun to see you there. I wondered, though, did you have a chance before we left to study some of the English language and clothing customs?
No, I did not. Straight to the airport, gift shop at the airport, which was British only in the souvenir themes, and that's about it.
So were you a little embarrassed when you showed up wearing, you know, American clothes?
No, I think it worked out okay. I think I fit in.
You can hold your own in any culture.
Well, the great thing about the conference is there's so many people from all over. And, I mean, obviously, there's a few people from Texas even, not just me. So that was nice.
That's right.
But, people, you know, all over Europe and just people that just don't have an opportunity to meet.
Right.
Most of the time. They don't make it to the States a lot. So, yeah, I don't know. I think I fit in okay. I felt comfortable. We're all peers here.
As long as you were in the confines of the conference where, you know, you have the common bond of nerdery.
Yes.
To help keep you comfortable with everybody. But, you know, if you left and went out to like a restaurant, they might just look at you with a blank stare.
Yeah. Why are you wearing jeans and sandals or whatever I usually wear around here? I only ventured out one time, actually. I mean, the conference, it was so well run, and it was so great just having, you know, places to go at night and dinners and just kind of everyone together, that I didn't really go far from the convention very often. But I did one night. I finally ran out of battery in my devices and ventured out to find a plug adapter for the UK, because the ones I ordered on Amazon before I left, of course, were the wrong ones, even though the reviews on Amazon were like, oh yeah, I went to England, this worked great for my iPhone.
Oh, you just needed the thing that maps the shape of the plug, right?
Like, exactly. Yeah. And so I was really conserving battery because I didn't have any charge for 2 days.
Yeah.
Finally ventured out to the pound land where everything is.
Oh, everything 1 pound. Was that in the mall right there? Yeah.
I think it was, yeah, it was just like a block or two away.
Pound land. Yes.
Yeah. It's like our dollar store here.
And was the adapter actually 1 pound?
I think it was actually 1 pound. Yeah.
That's a really good deal.
Yeah, I thought so too. So
I mean, for folks who aren't up to date with exchange rates, that means it was a mere $1.50. That's got to be cheaper than I've paid for mine, you know? Like you don't find that kind of stuff. You also don't find adapters like that at like the dollar store here in the US, I don't think.
No, probably not.
That's kind of a nice. Hey, I didn't know that the English equivalent of the dollar store was kind of a highfalutin thing for the world traveler.
Yeah, they had some stuff there. That's pretty good. But other than that, you know, stayed with my nerd friends, but I made so many new nerd friends. I've met so many new people at the conference. It's incredible. I think in the first day I met more people than I have in the last, you know, couple WWDCs put together. So it was very cool. Great
right.
conference.
It's the difference from WWDC of having people actually in one place for more than 3 minutes at a time. Like you see people at WWDC like up and down opposite directions on the escalator, and then that's like the only time you see them all week. Mm-hmm. Like, oh hi, I wanted to meet you. Oh bye.
Yeah.
And
see you next year.
Yeah. Well, I think Manton, this was your first NS conference.
It was.
And so you had the privilege of experiencing it, I think, at its best yet.
Cool.
It was, you know, kind of fun being out in the boonies in the old location. But I thought Leicester, UK, was a perfectly hospitable place for nerds to meet. And the venue was great. The organization of the conference was great. And Manton, I was really happy, holding my breath a little bit for you, but I was really happy with the way your talk turned out. I knew you were nervous, as was I, but you in particular, because it had been a while since you'd done any public speaking, And I think you should come out of this bolstered to, you know, you're going to speak at CocoConf, right? So, mm-hmm.
Yep, next month.
So
yeah, my confidence is way up now, definitely. I was a nervous wreck before my talk. I couldn't sleep the night before. I had trouble focusing in the next morning. But yeah, I'm glad to hear you say that.
Yeah. Well, I think it was a hit. And it was one of those things where it was evident that you had prepared. You know, it's like the worst mistake you can make is to be nervous and then kind of like get nervous and resign to that. I'm sure it will work out. Right. Mentality where it's like,
yeah,
oh, I didn't really prepare, but I'm sure I'll be able to just wing it up there. And mm-hmm. I may have leaned that way in some instances in the past, and it's not a good place to be. So anyway, yeah, it was real fun. To all those listening to the podcast, I mean, it was as usual, it's great when you go out to a conference and the number of people who have heard of the show is really heartening, and it's just great. So many people came up and introduced themselves, said they enjoyed the show. So I just want to thank all of you who are listening now who were at the show and did that, because not only is it great for us to hear the reassurances that we're making a great show, but it's also just really fun to meet you guys in person. So thanks a lot, everybody, for both coming to NS Conference and for being part of what was a really great community there for a really great conference.
Yeah, definitely. It's great to see everybody. I hope to be back at some point. It was really good. Really great experience.
So, Manton, there was just so much covered at the show. I don't think we can really do like a complete recap. The good news is that videos are going to be available at some point. But just touching on like one of the big themes of the show, I thought was really kind of like a lot of the talks were not technical per se, but they were sort of stories of success and failure for that matter in different, you know, for lack of a better word, indie software pursuits. You know, there were sort of like larger indie companies like Black Pixel telling their story. And then down to like one person startup companies. Emily Toop had a great story of her failure actually starting a children's book iOS startup. Mm-hmm. And I just thought it was really interesting. You know, some people even touched on like Craig Hockenberry had a talk about his impressions of being quote unquote indie, but not alone, I believe was the name of his talk. Mm-hmm. So there was a lot of indie talk in the air, and it seems like they're, you know, this is old hat for our community. We love talking about indie stuff, but it was maybe particularly prevalent at this show, compared to other shows and past NS conferences. What do you think? Why do you think indie is on everybody's mind in particular?
Yeah, I'm not sure right now. I mean, I don't know. It's something I'm always interested and fascinated with. And I was glad to see that also kind of a theme. I know it's been on Scotty's mind lately, because if anyone listens to the iDeveloper Live podcast that he does, this has been kind of a theme lately of how do we define indie, you know, and how do we be more specific about what it means, because we throw this word around a lot, but everyone has a different, you know, version of what it means. Everyone has also a different sort of backstory and like just, you know, what they need to support themselves, what types of work they want to do, whether it's just their own software, whether it's consulting, whether it's, you know, regular job too. And so I don't know. I liked that part about the conference a lot. And I mean, that was part of my talk too, in a lot of ways, even though, as longtime listeners will know, I still have a regular job too. I talk about the indie stuff all the time, and I do consider myself indie, even though it's not 100% of my salary, just because it's kind of this state of mind, just kind of it's more about, to me, the process about running your own business than exactly how you define it.
Right.
Whether it's 100% of your income, or whether you supplement your income with something else. But that was certainly a part of my talk. the business, kind of the business side of doing subscriptions and revenue, and I had charts and different things. And I tried to make it clear in my talk, I don't know if this came across, I tried to make it clear that this is something I'm trying, and I'm not totally there yet. You know, I've made a bunch of mistakes. I've talked on the show about hosting costs and all sorts of problems I've run into, but I feel like I'm on the right path with that process. And I don't know if that came across or not. But
yeah, I think it did. It's funny you said the indie state of mind, because you just read my mind. A blog post I put up on bit splitting like an hour ago. I guess this really is permeating. But this was a sort of from a different perspective. It was a response to Marco Arment's post about, you know, he's getting a lot of questions now that he's not on the 5x5 network anymore. Why is he making podcasts again, but not on 5x5? And I guess it's a reasonable question. But, you know, like you and I have gotten this question a lot. Like, why aren't you on a network? Why aren't you on 5x5? And it's as if people think that's the end all be all of having a podcast, is, well, someday you'll make it big and you'll get on a you'll get on a network. And I wrote about this. My response was sort of like, why don't people make these, you know, we've come to this point where it's like, it's almost like being an indie, quote unquote, indie software developer is almost respected like by default now. Whereas like, you know, not too long ago, maybe your parents or grandparents might be like, well, what you need to do is get yourself a nice steady job, you know, at a company with, you know, that'll be around for the long haul. And nobody's like constantly pestering me now, like, you should get a job at Apple, you know? But I thought the thing that resonated for me from Marco's post was his simple statement that when possible, he likes to basically own his own destiny, you know? And that, I think, in a very concise, is a very concise definition for that so-called indie state of mind. I mean, it's a little bit fuzzy, because who doesn't want that, right? Who doesn't want to own their own destiny? But a lot of people seem more comforted by the safety and predictability, relative predictability, of having somebody else call many of the shots. And I'm not saying there's anything wrong with that. I mean, you still, you know, own your own destiny, so to speak, in the sense you choose where to work and you have some input on what, you know, your employer has you do.
Sure.
But it's a very messy little thing, because folks like me who are sort of so sold now on being indie, doing my own thing, it's hard for me to sort of celebrate it without inadvertently maybe making somebody feel like I'm criticizing their choice to be more sort of dependent on others. But I think that comes back again to what you're saying, is like, and what Craig was saying, is like, you can value your own self-determination and your own flexibility to sort of adapt to what your changing desires are for your trajectory. And you can do that and sort of have that kind of indie state of mind, even while you have clients, while you have a job, while you are forced maybe to do some job that you think is utterly repugnant. But there still can be, you know, some element of, I'm going to redirect this ship, you know?
Yeah. I, this is kind of what you're saying about deciding what you're going to do, is something that was in Scotty's podcast too, about like, do you wake up in the morning and kind of decide what you're going to work on? And that doesn't necessarily just mean it's your own product. I mean, you could say that that's the process you go through every day and still also work for other people, depending on who it is.
Yep.
But I do like that, because I think there's certainly a part of being independent that is, you, at some level, you are making decisions. I remember I was thinking back when you were talking about like Craig Cockenberry and his talk about working with designers and how that's so valuable. And sometimes we think about independent as just one person, but there are lots of companies, small companies in our industry that we still consider indie, even though it's not just one person, you know? And I mean, I remember, you know, Wolf at C4 talked about this once about like, it's just kind of non-large. It's like, indie right. is like just not corporate, not a big company. You know, it's like Panic and Omni and these people have a lot of employees compared to Red Sweater.
Right.
But we still kind of consider them indie because they still have that kind of philosophy. They still feel small and they still, you know, they're kind of charting their own, you know, path and building apps. And they're going through the same process and the same sort of business that we're all in, even though they have 20 or 50 employees.
Yeah. And I mean, let's just accept that it's a fuzzy term and it means different things to different people. But like, for example, you could have an indie software company and maybe not everybody who works at that company feels particularly mm-hmm. indie.
True. Yeah, the founders feel indie, but maybe some of the other people don't.
Maybe some of the other people are still dreaming of going off and having their own, you know, and the inverse can be true. Some of the people who work there, the interests may be so aligned and the compensation may be so fair and the collaboration may be so inclusive of their opinions and their guide, you know, their feedback about the company that they may indeed feel as if they're part of this great indie software mission. But, you know, let's just accept it, that it both means different things to different people. And it also means different things in the context that you're talking about it. So
sure. By the strict definition of like from Scotty's and a lot of people, you know, I can't call myself indie, you know, strictly, technically that's not allowed. But again, I mean, there's stuff that I'm doing on my various products and the way I run my business that still feels very independent. And it is, I mean, these products I have 100% control over. So, I mean, they are, I'm not answering to anybody else. So there's different ways to interpret it.
Right. Have you ever read to your kids this children's book called Ish?
Mm-hmm.
You've heard of that, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So Manton, for folks who don't know, it's basically like a nice little like, you know, message for kids that like, even if you can't call yourself indie, it doesn't talk about being indie, but Manton, maybe if you're not indie, you could still be indish.
There you go. Indie-ish.
Indie-ish.
Yeah. That's fair.
It's, I mean, no, it's, I don't want to take away anybody's ability to call themselves what they like. So I appreciate, I really actually appreciate Scotty trying to kind of like draw some boxes around this stuff. And I think it's worthwhile to sort of celebrate it when somebody's personal definition of being indie is satisfied by reaching that goal, say, of not having a day job or not having clients. That happened to me when I stopped having consulting gigs. I felt different, you know. I think I probably considered myself indie before that,
right?
But then it was like, oh, I see.
Now it's really happening.
Yeah.
Well, part of what Sky is saying too is, I think awareness, like, making people think about what it's going to take to get to where you want to be. And by defining it very strictly and saying, nope, you're not independent right now. Now the next question is, okay, now what do I have to do to get there? Well, I need to think about business more, right? I need to actually not just randomly code things and hope people buy them. I actually need to think about marketing and how I'm going to sell my apps and how I'm going to have this consistent revenue over time that I can depend on. So, I mean, that's super valuable.
Yeah. Okay, this week we are happy to welcome back as sponsor of the show, Windows Azure Mobile Services, and they supply a scalable and secure backend for your iOS app. With only a few lines of code, you can store data in the cloud, add a user authentication via Facebook or Twitter, and send push notifications. Partnerships with SendGrid, Twilio, and Pusher let you send email and SMS, as well as add real-time functionality to the app while managing your credentials for all the services from a single pane of glass. everyone can get free mobile services for 10 apps by signing up for the 90-day free trial today. Learn more about what you can do with mobile services by visiting www.windowsazure.com/iOS. Now, Manton, I have to apologize to Microsoft and to our customers for apparently butchering the name of the product on our last sponsorship. And this time I went to the source, Microsoft's Developer Network Video Training Series on Windows Azure. And guess who I saw?
Brent Simmons.
Mr. Brent Simmons, the famous Brent Simmons from our Mac and iOS developer scene, recorded a bunch of training videos for Microsoft on this very subject. So I made a short URL for bit.ly/AzureBrent. And what a lucky coincidence that one of our closest friends in the Mac and iOS scene is joining us in sharing the news about Windows Azure mobile services.
Yeah. If anyone has doubts about whether this is something they should look at, I mean, check out the videos from Brent and look at also what they built with Glassboard. I mean, like we were talking about the conference earlier in the show, the Glassboard for NS Conference was really popular. Tons of people using it to connect, talk about sessions, meet up after the sessions or whatever. Great app. And it's all backed with Windows Azure. So it's a really cool service. I'm really impressed with it. If folks didn't listen the last time we talked about it, I got to try it out. Anyone can try it out. There's a free trial where you can get a virtual instance running, do some web stuff on it, do some web services stuff. They have this just super simple, click a couple times and you've got a web service running in the cloud, and it'll actually build an Xcode sample project for you, which can downloads to your Mac. And then you can, I mean, it's pre-configured to hit the server, and then you can tweak it or customize your app from there. So really deep iOS integration was kind of the most surprising thing to me, really impressive. But they also have just, you know, if you want to run servers, it doesn't have to be Windows servers. They have support for Ruby, Node.js, PHP, whatever. You can fire up instances, you can set up databases, and scale it from there. So it's a really impressed with the service so far.
That's really great. It's nice to, I think it's kind of nice in this kind of instance to have a service that you know is being used for far more than just iOS apps. You know, like it has the strength and capacity for all this other stuff that they're serving. So kind of a great deal that you can get on board with that infrastructure specifically for iOS development. Thanks again, Microsoft, for sponsoring the show. And again, you can learn more at www.windowsazure.com/iOS.
So we have a question today, kind of a comment from the Glassboard. It's from Andrew Rosendahl. He says, Manton, I think Daniel is right on the self-promotion of SearchPath. Give your customers a way to thank you by spreading the word, and give those who just stumble upon SearchPath on someone else's site a way to get one of their own. I think a small, semi-transparent link in the lower right-hand corner of the search results box would be unobtrusive, and developers could opt out easily. And he also talks about iDVD, kind of like the little Apple logo you see, and DVDs produced with that. So the idea, I've gotten a lot of feedback like this. You know, we talked about it a little bit on the show, and I probably posted to app.net or something else. People saying, you know, what I did is not quite right. And what I did was, if you haven't paid yet, I just show two search results and then a little snippet of text that says, you know, using the trial version, if you're the owner of this website, you know, please upgrade to the paid version. So some people have said what Andrew says here. Some people have said things like show all the links, search results, but like dim out or unlink some of them.
Mm. Hey, that's an idea. I like that.
Yeah. And also a lot of people say, you know, even when you've paid, by default, show the search path branding, but let the website owner disable it. So I was very concerned that if you've paid for my app, I don't want to put advertisements on what you're doing. But a lot of people are saying, don't worry about it so much. They can turn the ad off, but putting that by default might help spread awareness about the product.
It's a fine line, Manton, but there's so many examples where people have come to be at peace with moderate marketing and advertising on their products. And, you know, I think a great example for everybody listening to this show is the shining, illuminated Apple logo on the backs of your laptop covers that advertise to everybody in the cafe or airport lounge exactly what brand of computer you're using. And I know some people don't like that and they put stickers over it or something, but it's kind of like there's also on the flip side of that, there's also a lot of customer pride, you know, and like for years and years and years, Apple has given out Apple stickers with almost every product you can buy. And then people, you know, maybe more so in the past, would put stickers on their cars and things like that. Mm-hmm. And it's like people want the option to spread the word, you know, like people often ask me for, can they use the Mars Edit image in like a sidebar link on their blog? They want to brand it. And I think it's reasonable. I think it's empathetic to your customers who don't want that, to make it easy and possible to opt out of that. But I think it's also reasonable to assume that a lot of people, especially for a small business like yours, the audience you're reaching, at least at the beginning, is going to be heavily weighted towards like people who are kind of fans, you know, fans of Manton Reese and fans of Riverfold and fans of SearchPath. So put that into your thinking on this subject, I think, because it's much different when Manton Reese, a small-time Austin-based web Mac iOS developer, puts a little link in than it is for, say, like Google to have a link in there.
Right. And also, I think with Google, people would treat a small little Google link differently than Google actually putting ads, like real ads for other people in their search results, which of course they do, depending on how you use Google.
Right.
And I'll never do that. That's completely the point of SearchPath, is to not have ads littering all over the place in your search results. But yeah, I don't know. This is something I definitely don't think I'm doing this right, but I'm also a little bit worried about changing it too many times. Like I feel like I need to think this through a little bit and then change it, and then I'm done. That's how the trial works.
You might also consider, you know, to alleviate some of your concerns, you might make this, as you were suggesting, a checkbox and have it be checked on by default for all future customers, but checked off by default for existing customers. Because then you know, you'll be giving people the experience as part of their trial. And if they see it and they don't like it, then maybe they'll ask about it. Maybe they'll see the checkbox, whatever. But, you know, if your concern is that you've sort of sold this to people who are gonna feel like now they get a gummed up ad laden experience, then we'll just leave it off by default for them.
Yeah, that makes sense. I think I could do that.
Yeah.
What do you think about this other suggestion about showing all the results, but having some of them dimmed, or?
I think that's a great suggestion, because in fact, in trialing your product, that was one of the problems for me visualizing how it's going to work for my customers, is I don't actually see the entire list of results. And furthermore, there was sort of some kind of like, I think maybe you pick kind of like a random selection of them, or I don't know if you do or not, but I noticed like I'd get a different two results sometimes. And
oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, that might be a bug.
Okay. Well,
I didn't mean to do that.
Edit that out. Okay, Manton. We will have no admissions of bugs on the show.
Yeah.
But
my software is not bug free, unfortunately, yet.
But even if it's just the first two, the problem is you may be wondering, well, is it going to, I want to know if it's going to catch this like page of interest that's further down the list. And without some way to confirm that, I might be less inclined to actually pull the trigger and buy the service.
Yeah, I think I'm convinced. I think that makes a lot of sense.
Yep,
sure. Because it's more useful to people trying it.
Yep.
But also, it's kind of both more useful and more obvious that they haven't paid. So it's kind of the best of both.
Yeah. I think that's a great suggestion. It's interesting. These are the challenges: how to market, how to offer a suitable trial. One of the things I've long put off in Mars Edit, I think for similar reasons to the way you're feeling about this, is some kind of like blogged with Mars Edit tag, as an option at the end of a post. And I've thought about that in the past, like, oh, I could make that be there by default only for the trial version, but then it's the same kinds of questions, the same kinds of issues come up. Like, and I don't want people to think while they're trialing the software that this trashy app puts its self-promotional link in there. On the other hand, people have asked, can you make it so that I automatically put a blogged with Mars Edit thing? Because it's very similar to mail, like sent with mail. I think it's different because your blog is more of a personal, permanent kind of artifact on the web. And I wouldn't want to have an ad at the bottom of every one of my posts.
Right.
But not everybody thinks like me. So
That's interesting. Yeah, it's funny. I got an email yesterday from someone asking what I use for my blog. And I guess, I use like this ancient version of Movable Type that is so old that, and maybe I've customized the template enough where it's, you can't recognize it as belonging to Tumblr or Blogger or anything else. But I think it's funny that there's so many big blogging systems now, and some are so obvious. Okay, this is a Tumblr site. This is a WordPress site. And then there's some other ones. I guess mine is in this category. Yours probably too. That's just, it's different enough that you can't place it, which I like.
Right.
But if you put a tagline after every post, then I don't know. It's obviously a little more obvious, but.
Well, that's a good example. Like Movable Type and WordPress don't have after in every post, like this was powered by Movable Type,
I don't know. In the old days, it seems like depending on your license, you were required to put some kind of
maybe on the site thing. As a whole. Yeah, yeah.
Like at the bottom. I can't remember now. I don't have anything like that. I don't believe.
Yeah, WordPress by default does do like proudly powered by WordPress.
Right.
On the other hand, it's free, so there is that. But yeah, it's subtle. But my spidey sense says little like the suggestion in Glassboard was saying, just a little subtle, very can gloss right by it. Little search path, a brand like you would see on a car, right? Like Toyota, that happens to be clickable. Right. What's the harm in that, really? I mean, they're using your service because they think it's good. And it's like, think of it like the Apple logo. Like, right. It's the Apple logo that you can click on.
Yep. I like it. I think I'll do that. And if I really knew what I was doing, I would kind of test like A/B test. Like, are people more likely to buy it with this kind of search results versus that? I'll probably just follow my gut and based on the feedback that, you and other people have given me, just change it. But it will be interesting to look at signups and see if any of this kind of stuff makes a difference.
Yeah. Well, I think that you'll probably get like some small percentage of people who are turned off by any branding, but I think that would probably be far offset by the greater, brand awareness that you'll earn from that.
I definitely need to do more to spread the word. And I've also been thinking, so I've had a couple people who aren't really happy with the way my JavaScript works, and so they kind of fork it and just kind of tweak it. And I've thought about kind of embracing that and actually open sourcing the parts of the product that, if you know what you're doing, you can get anyway, right? Because it's all in a web browser.
Right.
If someone watches your talk from NS Conference about the Web Inspector, they will learn the tricks for hijacking search paths JavaScript. But I've been thinking about kind of open sourcing that and actually kind of promoting that as a thing and as a, you still have to subscribe to search path for it to do anything useful.
Right.
But as kind of another way to market the app and also a way to get people to, people want different themes for search path,
right.
Different looks and styles, way for people to be able to do that and submit those back to me that I could then incorporate into the product. And again, yeah, just another way to get awareness about it. And that's unique in this product that none of my other apps really have. they've never had this component that could easily be open source to help get people, you know about the product.
Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, it's obviously worked really well for some big companies, like, or, you know, big, let's say big indies, like 37 Signals is, mm-hmm. I know you often look to them for inspiration, but, you know, it's obviously helped them and not hindered them to open source Rails.
Right.
And in fact, it's probably been one of the things that takes them from, you know, relative obscurity into great fame. But years and years ago, I thought maybe because, you know, one of the tedious things about Mars Edit is developing all these blogging API supports. And mm-hmm. I thought years ago, oh, what if I just open source the part of Mars Edit that talks to all the blogs? And that would give me like some notoriety, and it would also give other people the opportunity to chip in and like help take the burden of supporting all this different stuff. And I ended up not doing it because I sort of also recognized, however, that that's actually my like secret weapon. You know, I mean,
yeah.
To all the like two or three like militant GPL loving listeners on our show are like cringing and like picking up arms and storming the castle now. But that's, you know, secret code sauce. And that's, I find it very tricky to determine what is your secret sauce and what is, you know, it's this whole idea of like trying to commoditize what you no longer have the ability to sort of differentiate yourself on. And I think that's tricky sometimes, like with 37 Signals, they decided, you know, let's commoditize Rails and keep my summation of their differentiating ability is that they keep for themselves their discipline in choosing features and implementing them in a simple way. Anybody else could try to copy that, but they, you know, they wouldn't. So I guess similarly, like Apple has open sourced a bunch of their fundamentals, Darwin, a lot of open source projects going into that, but then they keep for themselves this ability to, for whatever reason, they keep the visual frameworks. AppKit is not open source, but
unfortunately.
Unfortunately, and I think that, yeah, you could make an argument for it being open source and not hurting Apple at all. But I don't know. Maybe they feel. Maybe they're worried that that would just be make it too easy for an upstart company to make a new Mac competitor or iOS competitor.
All right. Well, thanks. Getting back to the question. Thanks, Andrew, for the question. We'll follow up again. Maybe we'll see how this works. I'm definitely going to make some kind of change to Search Path. It's interesting to think about the best way to market and promote things with the trial version of an app. I think we're done. Thanks everybody for listening. Again, NS Conference was really great. Check out the videos. I think Scotty did a great job setting the tone for the conference, and I was just really impressed with last week. So
really great job. I think Scotty is a hero to all of the people who attended, and I'm sure many more outside of that scope. So I'm really grateful to Scotty for inviting both of us to speak there. And I was really glad, Manton, that you decided to go.
Me too.
And as I said earlier, thanks to everybody who listens to the show, who came up and said hello, or even just appreciates that we're doing what we're doing. Talk to you next week.
Okay. See ya.